This is Nightly Business Report with Tyler Matheson and Sue Herrera.
Stocks rocked. The Dow falls nearly 275 points. Investors run for cover and wonder if the rally is starting to crack.
Bucking the trend, unlike at most retailers, at Walmart, sales are up. Its major investments are paying off. So why is the stock trading lower?
Risky business with inventory low and prices high. Are home buyers turning to non-traditional mortgages to get their deals done? Those stories and more tonight on Nightly Business Report for Thursday, August 17th.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome. Wall Street had not seen a down day like this in 3 months. The selling was broad and intense, with the retail and tech sectors suffering some of the deepest losses. Investors dumped stocks, Dow, S&P, NASDAQ, didn't matter, and they bought bonds, sending yields lower. They also put money into gold, a so-called safe haven. Let's get right to the closing numbers for this Thursday. The Dow Jones Industrial Average plunged 274 points to 21,750. NASDAQ tumbled 123, and the S&P 500 was off by 38. There wasn't just one reason for the sell-off today. Washington uncertainty contributed, so did some weak earnings reports. And the losses intensified midday on news of a deadly terror attack in the heart of Barcelona. Bob Pisani watched the sell-off today from the floor of the New York Stock Exchange.
Are the markets in trouble? Well, not yet, but there's some cracks. We've seen something in the last 2 weeks we haven't seen in some time. A sell-off last week and another one this week. That's starting to do some technical damage. The small-cap Russell 2000 and the Dow Transports have both broken below a key level, along with almost half of all NYSE stocks. What's causing this? Several events have come together. First, there's leadership doubts about President Donald Trump starting to emerge. The markets drifted lower today on an erroneous rumor that National Economic Council head Gary Cohn might resign. The White House later said he was staying. And later in the day, the market took another dip lower when Senator Bob Corker told reporters that the president has yet to show the stability or competence, his words, necessary to be a successful leader. That's not good for stocks. Traders are still very focused on tax cuts, and they want the White House and Congress to get it together soon. Second, the stock market is not cheap right now, and leadership looks a little tired. So Amazon, for example, is 11% off its high, but it's still up 28% for the year. Third, earnings may be topping. The S&P is only expected to post earnings gains of 6% in the third quarter after double-digit gains in the first and second quarter. Finally, the Federal Reserve, which has been such a help for many years to stocks, is now mostly perceived to be neutral. The risk is that the Fed may tighten too much, and that would drop stocks for sure. The next few days will be an important test. All this year, people have been set to buy when the stock market falls, and there hasn't been much of that. We've had a huge run in the markets. Now may be a good time to get a pullback. What's a pullback? In today's context, 5% would be notable. We haven't had that in a long time. You have to go back to Brexit in June of 2016. A 5% drop from the recent closing high of 2480 would bring us to 2356. That would be the levels we saw in May. Seems like a long time ago, doesn't it? For Nightly Business Report, I'm Bob Pisani at the New York Stock Exchange.
Sarah Hunt joins us now to talk more about today's market sell-off and what she sees ahead for stocks. She is portfolio manager at Alpine Funds. Welcome back, Sarah. Nice to have you here.
Thank you.
Bob Pisani laid out some of the various reasons that the market sold off. Of those, one, do you agree? And two, of those, which was the most important factor, do you think, from your point of view?
Well, I think that you have a couple of things going on, and he elaborated on a lot of them. I think that what the Fed is going to do going forward is an important issue. I think the issue that has happened with the Council of Economic Advisers and some of the people that were on some of those government councils, I think that has unnerved people a little bit with the agenda going forward. And for the U.S., it's really going to be about the economy, and it's going to be about earnings and the Fed. So I think that the destabilizing factors, not to downplay any of the other parts, because obviously what happened in Barcelona today was also very terrible. But I think that going forward for the market, it's going to need to see some underpinnings on the economic front that it can count on.
You know, we've had a long time without a 100-point down day. We had one or two last week. We've now had a nearly 300-point down day this week. Should investors just get ready for more of these and more volatility as we move into the fall and later part of the year?
Well, I think what's interesting is that we were all collectively looking for more volatility after the elections were over and the administration started, and we really didn't get very much. And I think that the anticipation of some of the programs that may come has been part of what's been driving the market. But I think earnings has also been a very big part of that. So we outperformed in the second quarter what the expectations were in the beginning of the year. We can see what happens with earnings in the third quarter. I think that's going to be important. And I think that volatility, it should not be a surprise for a little bit to come back. It's been surprising how quiet it has been for the last few months.
You know, today notwithstanding, we've been making new highs in the market on a pretty consistent basis. And the discussion has been, are we overvalued? Are we fairly valued? How do you feel about that aspect of the market? And are you finding opportunities to deploy cash?
Well, we're a dividend fund, so we're always looking for dividend opportunities. We think there are some places where you've seen some energy, for one, is an area that has had some problems, but I think that there's some good opportunities there. We look at BP in that space. And also, obviously, unfortunately, the defense stocks, even though they've had a good run, also look like they're going to have some earnings growth into the next few years. So there are places that you can definitely look where there will be earnings and dividends, and we think that that's where you need to be looking.
Energy and defense are two areas you like. What about fixed income? A lot of individual investors have a lot of their money tied up in fixed income products.
Well, and there's always been the question of when people are going to move out of fixed income and into stocks. But I think what you've been seeing recently is the other way, where people have been moving back into fixed income, because even though rates are still low, I think that that's a little bit of a safety trade. And I think that that's the tough part. I think that's why people are going for dividend stocks, because they can't get yield in the fixed income markets. So it's got to be a combination approach.
On that note, Sarah, thank you so much. Sarah Hunt with Alpine Funds.
As the retail industry struggles, the world's largest store, Walmart, saw sales rise and beat both profit and revenue estimates for the quarter. Now, that's not an easy thing to do in this environment. But like Home Depot earlier this week, the results were not enough, good as they were, not enough for investors. They were disappointed by the adjusted earnings and the outlook. Courtney Reagan has more on Walmart's quarter.
It's steady as she goes for the world's largest retailer, Walmart, putting up another solid quarter nearly across the board, leading the discounter to raise its profit expectations for the year. But in the most recent quarter, profits were capped because of big investments to improve e-commerce, increase wages, and lower prices for shoppers. However, the investments seem to be working.
Their improvement of the way the stores look, the assortments in the food area, the quality, the service, the friendliness, I had to tell you something, dramatically different than a year ago, and that was even better than the year before that.
While other retailers have seen inconsistent sales trends, Walmart has reported a string of sales gains, marking 12 straight quarters of growth. U.S. store traffic also continues to improve, and analysts think profit margins may start to grow again soon.
In a world where Amazon seems to be taking over, if you can have a player like Walmart not only accelerate comp store sales, but also increase margins, this will be a pretty good story.
While still a much smaller part of the business, Walmart's U.S. online sales grew 60% from last year, just slightly below last quarter's growth. Walmart says the sales strength in the quarter was broad-based, but it did call out grocery, noting the best performance in 5 years. Since food is more than half of the discounter sales, most analysts agree it's the most important category for growth and a big focus for Walmart. The discounter's online grocery with parking lot pickup has been well received and will be in more than 1,000 stores by year end. An important opportunity, especially as competitors like Aldi add stores, Lidl enters the U.S., and Amazon buys Whole Foods. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Courtney Reagan.
The leading economic index, a broad measure of how well the economy is performing, climbed in July. It also signaled potentially faster growth in the second half of the year. According to the Conference Board, the index rose 0.3% last month. But there was an outlier as well. Housing permits were weak, and that's not something the housing market wants to see. As we've been reporting, the lack of supply of houses for sale has helped push home prices higher.
Mortgage rates continue to slide. Ongoing economic uncertainty kept a lid on bond yields, which mortgage rates tend to track. According to Freddie Mac, the rate on the 30-year fixed loan averaged just 3.89%. That's right around its low for the year.
And the end of the summer slowdown in the housing market has been made even worse by high home prices and little for sale. That has some buyers turning to riskier loans to get their deal done. Diana Olick reports.
Open houses have been packed all summer, and all that demand has only pushed home prices even higher. The trouble is, so much of the demand is from younger buyers who are already struggling to get into home ownership. That's why more and more are using low down payment loans.
House prices have risen about 40% cumulatively since 2012. And at the same time, there are a lot of people now with jobs, with wages increasing, and they see housing as an appreciating asset. And so getting a low down payment loan is one of the ways to get into one of these appreciating houses.
In the past 12 months, 1.5 million borrowers bought their homes with down payments of less than 10%, marking a 7-year high, according to Black Knight Financial Services. They now account for 40% of purchase lending. While FHA had been the low down payment loan of choice for young borrowers, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac also have 3% down options and are gaining market share.
Loans with less equity have a higher risk of default because there's less skin in the game.
The less skin in the game, the more risky the loan if house prices should suddenly take a U-turn. Borrowers are more likely to default on a loan if they have less equity in the home. Along with low down payment loans, adjustable rate loans are also back in favor, up 13% compared to a year ago, according to the Mortgage Bankers Association. That is likely because they are cheaper than fixed rate loans. While both of these loans are riskier, the good news is today's borrowers have much better credit scores than those during the last housing boom and are thus less likely to have trouble making monthly payments, no matter where home prices head. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Diana Olick in Washington.
So what do these risky mortgages mean for the housing market overall? Susan Wachter is professor of real estate and finance at the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School of Business. Professor, welcome. Good, as always, to see you. You know more about this stuff than anybody else I know.
Thank you.
1.5 million loans in the last year with low down payments below 10%. I heard Diana mention 3% down loans. Should we be worried about this? Are we repeating history?
We're not repeating history. We're not in bubble territory. Should we be worried? No. But should we watch this trend? Absolutely. It bears watching. This is real demand forces out there. It's not irrational expectations that is driving prices higher. But if we have a rate spike, if we have a recession, prices will fall.
How do you feel about the economy in that sense? Because the Federal Reserve just yesterday said there wasn't basically enough inflation in there, and it's maybe putting off its interest rate hike. But there are those who say we are going to eventually head into a recession. How do you feel about it, and how might that affect housing?
Well, recession, you know, we've not outlawed recessions. Business cycles will be with us. It will happen. There's no sign of it happening now. And interest rate spike, a large interest rate spike, there's no sign of that either. The problem is with ARMs, there's a much greater vulnerability to an interest rate spike. So that's the combination to beware of. Pervasive low down payment mortgages so that LTV is 95% pervasively, a 5% price decline, which is not uncommon, could be a problem. But right now, that's the marginal buyer. It's not overall. Bears watching going forward.
So in the housing crisis, a couple of things happened. Number one was that some of the buyers, the lenders really didn't check them out. They didn't look at whether they had the incomes they said they had. There were the liar loans and so on and so forth. And the other thing that was going on was that the appraisers were putting really outlandish numbers. They were just going ahead and saying, yeah, the house is worth that. Have those two things been corrected?
They have. But that doesn't mean that we've prevented any future bubble by any means, because you can get a bubble simply out of an increase in ARMs and in low down payment loans that leads to self-perpetuating expectation of price increases and further reduction of further rise in loan to values and further reduction in debt to income. We've seen it happen in other countries. It could happen. We're not in that territory. Prices reflect fundamentals. They reflect current low interest rates and high rents and job gains.
How would you characterize the market at this point? Because Diana has pointed out in her reporting earlier in the year, some are calling it the tightest market in history. Do you agree with that? Are you seeing any loosening in that or any relief in that or not?
Yes, it absolutely is tied to market. Diane is right about that. And it's because of low inventory. Where there is some loosening going forward is the huge increase in multifamily building, and that's going to put a lid on rent growth to some extent. And that will open up the market, make renting more affordable, easier to save for a down payment. So we should find some easing of high rents, which then will hopefully feed into lower price.
Susan Walker, one of the best with the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Still ahead tonight, the uncertain future of nuclear power.
Coming up, cheap natural gas doing what a nuclear disaster couldn't do to Three Mile Island. That story on Nightly Business Report.
House Democrats are launching an investigation into why prices for multiple sclerosis treatments have almost quadrupled since 2004. The lawmakers sent letters to seven drug makers, including Teva, Sanofi, Novartis, and Biogen, requesting information. They want to determine whether the drug companies all raised prices at about the same time.
EpiPen maker Mylan has finalized a deal with the Department of Justice. The drug maker has agreed to pay more than $460 million to settle charges that the company overcharged the government for the injection allergy medication. The agreement ends the investigation, which found that Mylan avoided paying state Medicaid programs higher rebates by recategorizing the brand medicine as generic. According to investigators, Mylan raised EpiPen prices by about 400% between the years 2010 and 2016.
Express Scripts is instituting a new opioid management program, but it is drawing criticism from members of the American Medical Association. The program limits the strength and amount of the drugs prescribed for first-time users. The goal is to help prevent the overuse and then abuse of the medicine. But according to the Associated Press, doctors say treatment plans should be left to physicians and their patients. Express Scripts competitor CVS Caremark has a similar program.
The Gap lifts its full-year earnings forecast, and that's where we begin tonight's Market Focus. The apparel retailer said its stronger-than-expected results are a result of the company's investments in products and customer service. Gap also said same-store sales climbed higher, largely thanks to strength in its Old Navy brand. Shares initially rose in the extended session and also ended the regular day up fractionally to $22.68. After the bell, Ross Stores reported profit and sales that beat analysts' expectations. The retailer also said it expects same-store sales for the current quarter to rise 1 to 2%. Shares initially took off in after hours. They ended the regular session down, though nearly 2% to $53.33. And the Chinese e-commerce company Alibaba saw its sales rise as more shoppers made purchases online. Net income nearly doubled, and the company said its technology is driving significant growth across its business. Shares were up nearly 3% to $163.92.
Morgan Stanley raised its rating on Molina Healthcare from underweight to overweight, also raising its price target on the stock. The bank's bullish sentiment toward Molina is attributed to the company's restructuring plan that Morgan Stanley says will lead to Molina's growth. Molina Healthcare shares rose almost 5% on this very negative day to $59.51. Madison Square Garden posted a wider-than-expected loss as the entertainment and sports company faced higher costs and lower sales at several of its venues. Revenue, though, ahead of expectations, shares down more than 4% to $208.15. And the activist investor Bill Ackman unveiled his plan to double the stock price of payroll processor ADP over the next 5 years. The billionaire recently disclosed his hedge fund is Pershing Square, has taken an 8% stake in ADP, and is pushing for changes at the company. The proposed plan includes layoffs, cost cuts, technology investments. ADP said, we disagree with the strategy. Shares of ADP down more than 5%, finishing the day at $104.68.
A number of nuclear power plants in the U.S. have made the decision to shut down, and more are expected to do so. One of those plants is Three Mile Island, and it's at the center of a new debate over the future of nuclear energy. Jackie DeAngelis reports tonight from Middletown, Pennsylvania.
Cheap natural gas may do what the worst nuclear power accident in U.S. history couldn't, shut down Three Mile Island. Safety concerns aside, cheap natural gas has made it so plants like this one are no longer profitable. Five nuclear facilities have closed in the U.S. since 2013. Three Mile Island is one of a handful that's expected to close in the future. Proponents for the shutdown say these plants are dangerous and need to go. But this community feels differently.
I lived here in 1979 when the meltdown occurred. I've never felt safer living here.
Exelon Executive VP Joe Dominguez highlights what he calls long-term value.
These plants are designed to operate 60 and as much as 80 years. So, yeah, we are at a point where natural gas prices are relatively low. But as you pointed out, history tells us that we got to be careful about that because natural gas prices could go up very rapidly.
The difference between profitability and not is about $2 in the natural gas price. Nat gas at $3 now, this plant loses money. But at $5, it doesn't. In the past decade, prices shot up to the low teens. If this plant continues to lose money, it will close, impacting workers like Christine DeSantis, who works here with her husband.
From a personal perspective, my husband also works here, so it's a big impact on us. We just had our second daughter, so we have to decide what we're going to do if TMI does shut down.
And of course, it's not just Christine and her husband. Three Mile Island employs over 650 people.
There's 675 full-time jobs, family-sustaining jobs, good-paying jobs that total a $60 million payroll per year. In addition, they pay $1 million in tax revenue to the Lower Dauphin School District, to Londonderry Township, and to Dauphin County. And every other year, including this year, starting next month in September, 1,000 union labor jobs come in and work on the site.
It could take more than 2 years to shut down a plant like this one, and once it's shut down, it cannot be reopened. It's a permanent decision to shift away from nuclear energy. But still, the state, even the federal government, could step in and change this plant's fate.
The Trump administration recently came out with a request for the Department of Energy to do a study on the flaws in the market design. And the Department of Energy recognizes these flaws. And so that's what we hope the Trump administration, the new commission at the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, new commissioners will be able to accomplish.
Market design means cleaner energy sources. Nuclear has come a long way to compete. Whether in favor of nuclear energy or not, it does offer diversity to the U.S. grid, another option to balance energy generation and usage. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Jackie DeAngelis in Middletown, Pennsylvania.
Coming up, granny pods, a new and some might call odd way to care for America's rapidly aging population. They're small, they're unusual, and they're helping older Americans age in place, kind of. Jane Wells tells us about granny pods from Oakland, California.
We have a living room, dining room with large windows for light.
67-year-old Jane Baldwin is on the move, making a big change.
How's your health? My health is perfect now that I've gotten my second hip replaced.
Baldwin raised a family in Wyoming, but now her son is raising his own family in Oakland, California, and she wants to be close to help, but not too close.
That wouldn't work long term, living with my son under the same roof.
Instead, she built a tiny 400 square foot house in her son's backyard, nicknamed a granny pod. The Census Bureau predicts one in five Americans will be over the age of 65 by the year 2030, and most of them will eventually need some sort of assisted care. There isn't enough assisted living to meet demand.
Have you figured out where everything's going to go?
Not at all.
So architects have discovered a new niche business, granny pods. The ones that Carrie Shores builds for Inspired Independence cost $250,000, which is still cheap for Bay Area housing. And seniors are often buying them to plan ahead.
I met with this family the other night. Their adult son would live in the in-law unit, but we're designing it age in place so that when they're tired of maintaining their home and the large property that they're not using or climbing up the stairs, they'll move in there. And at that point, he might be married and have kids, and he'd move into the main house.
laws in six states now specifically allow granny pods, but in many cases they have to be temporary structures. This one is a permanent one. And because they're so expensive, if it's only temporary, it may not be for everyone.
If people can age in place and age at home, it's much healthier and the family's happier, but it can be very expensive. Granny pods can cost anywhere from $100,000 to $250,000, so you've got to weigh longevity in there with it.
Carolyn McClanahan also says they may not be right for a parent with dementia who needs more intensive care. These structures may also raise your property taxes. And then there are the neighbors. In Baldwin's case,
I have plenty of storage.
Her structure is under 500 square feet, so zoning laws did not require neighbor approval.
I looked forward to living smaller. I just think all of us, but myself in particular, have too much stuff in our lives.
For Nightly Business Report, Jane Wells, Oakland, California.
And finally tonight, Fortune magazine is out with its 40 Under 40 list. It ranks the most influential young leaders in business and government. Topping the list is the president of France, Emmanuel Macron. Facebook's Mark Zuckerberg is number two. And rounding out the top three are the co-founders of China's leading ride-sharing company. That list also includes the CEO and co-founders of Airbnb, the Lyft co-founders, and the CEO of Restaurant Brands. And that will do it for Nightly Business Report tonight. I'm Sue Herrera. Thanks for joining us.
I'm heading back to my pod now.
You heading to your pod?
Yes.
You
I'm
go,
Tyler
Granny.
Matheson. Have a great evening, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow.